I created a comprehensive step-by-step program called Healed Being for emotionally abusive people that want to change over at healedbeing.com. If you hurt the people you love or you know someone that does, Healed Being is the most effective, most comprehensive course that will change lives. Check it out over at healedbeing.com. Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, and I want to help you learn the skills you need to deal with life's challenges using emotional intelligence and critical thinking without compromising who you are. This show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. Always seek a professional for your mental health and well-being. I wonder how I sound, because I can't tell. I've been sick for the last week three now. Got COVID a couple weeks back. 2.5 weeks and just working it out. Hopefully it's not long COVID, but I can't even tell how I sound. I think I sound 85% myself. So without rambling on about that, there are a couple of things that I learned that I'd like to share. Whether it helps you or not, I do not know, but I want to at least let you know what I've learned while being sick, while recovering. And one of them is I save a lot of money by not going out. I mean, we're saving a lot of money. We're both sick. We both have COVID. And we've learned that we can save a lot of money by not leaving the house. So we're lucky that we get to work from home. Very fortunate. We're very grateful that we can do that. And when we don't leave the house, we save a lot of money. So I'm noticing the bank account gets a little bit more funded, or not unfunded, not withdrawn. And that's a benefit. So that's a benefit of not being able to go out to restaurants, meet up with friends, go out to events. It's isolating, so that's a drawback, but being able to save some money, that's very helpful. And with the price of eggs... Luckily, they've come back down as of this recording. It's now February of 2023. And wow, I love eggs. I eat them every day, and they were expensive for a while. But having had to stay home for all this time, we're saving money. So that's one thing that I learned. Another thing that I learned is that being physically unwell, it is... we've had to be in separate bedrooms because we weren't sure if we were passing it back and forth or if I had a different strain or variant. And so she stayed in one bedroom. I stayed in another. And I learned something. It was interesting. I learned that it felt more free to be in the bedroom by myself at night. Like, I could turn on my phone, I could turn on the TV, I could make noise, and I didn't have to worry about someone else there sleeping. And it's not like I do worry about it ever. I just never thought about it. So it was an interesting experiment, I guess you could say, that when we were at our most sick and we were coughing, that's another reason we had to separate, because we were coughing and waking up, and I didn't want to wake her up, and same for her. She didn't want to wake me up, and that was what we noticed, is that we could do whatever and say whatever and cough and get up and go to the bathroom without disturbing the person that we were with, our partner, her, me. And that was interesting to me, because when I went to bed, normally I would miss her. I would miss being next to her. And when we go to bed together, that is something that I think about, like, oh, she's not in the bedroom. Now I can't go to sleep. So I stay awake, and I don't mean to. I just stay awake. It's just I can't go to sleep. But when I know we're not going to be going to the same bedroom together, I fall asleep faster, or I stay awake because I don't really need to go to sleep because we're on different schedules or different times. So I just thought that was interesting. And we're back in the bedroom now together. And it was just as wonderful as before, being connected, being together with somebody you love. It's wonderful to have them near you. But I also discovered that there were also benefits to going to bed by myself and having that freedom. It was weird because it felt like being single again, and that's not what I want. But it was interesting to me to go through that experience where we're in separate bedrooms and not mad at each other. That's different. And I don't know who this affects or if this is of any value to you whatsoever. But, you know, if you're not in a romantic relationship, you probably don't care about this, or maybe you have feelings about it, and I apologize about that. But if you are, and you ever want to try this experiment, it's pretty interesting. Hopefully you don't have to. Maybe you don't want to be apart. I don't want to be apart from her, but it was an interesting experiment, or at least a necessity while we were sick. And again, I'm still feeling it, still feeling the coughing and the congestion, and you could probably hear it in my voice. Like I said, probably 85% of my voice is back, but not all of it. So, oh, I also want to say that I appreciate the love. People have wished me well on the Facebook group and sent me messages. Thank you so much. I consider myself not sick at all compared to a lot of people, but thank you for your support and your love. Anyway, what am I talking about today? I'm going to do my best to get through this episode. My episodes are typically an hour long. And as long as I don't start coughing, or as long as I can keep my breath — I haven't been short of breath, so that's a good sign — but I am congested, so I will do my best. I did get a message from somebody a while back, and this person wrote, "Thanks for your podcast, your vulnerability, your honesty is refreshing and inspiring." You're welcome. "I have been struggling with communication in my relationship. Through your podcast, I realized that his behavior," her partner, "has been turning into emotional abuse. I know it has nothing to do with me, and I don't think he is doing it intentionally. The later part is, why am I still in this relationship, making strides to repair and heal it? He has agreed to counseling, but he doesn't want to talk about anything outside of our appointments. I used your technique of saying, 'You may be right,' and asking questions like a best friend would, and we had a breakthrough." I'll explain that in a moment. "The first thing he said was, 'I don't understand why we need to be vulnerable to create attachment or connection.' And I believe him when he says that. He truly doesn't understand, and I think that's why he can't be vulnerable. What are some ways I can support him? And when do I leave if he won't ever be ready? I don't want to keep living like this, but I do see potential." Thanks for sharing that. This came in a while back. I don't know if the situation's the same, but I always answer questions as if they're happening now. You might be going through something similar as this person who wrote. So thank you for writing this. And I'm going to address the components of this message, because there are a few things that stood out, and I think they're important to discuss. One of the things that you said was, "I don't think he's doing it intentionally." You might be right. Oh, you asked, "Why am I still in the relationship and making strides to repair and heal it?" That sticks out, because not one person — it shouldn't be one person's job to make huge strides, or any strides, to repair a relationship. It's not one person's job to do that. It's one person's job to show up as the best person they can in any relationship. That's one person's job. It's both people's jobs to repair the relationship, or heal it, or salvage it, or work together to fix whatever is broken. It's two people, not one. If one person is making the strides to repair and heal it, as this person says, then it's not a healthy way to do it. It's not a productive way to do it. And it shouldn't all fall on your shoulders. It shouldn't fall on one person's shoulders to fix things. A relationship is a minimum of two people, but typically two people. A relationship is two people working on keeping things, maintaining things, keeping things good, and trying to maintain positivity, trying to maintain healthy communication, healthy boundaries, honoring each other's boundaries, valuing each other, and understanding that both people have their own values, what's important to them, and valuing their desire to follow their own path and supporting them following their path and hoping, crossing your fingers, that the path they're on is the same path that you're on, or at least parallel, so that you are kind of holding hands along the way, if it's that type of relationship. I think it's important to make sure that everyone understands, in a relationship, everyone understands that it's everyone's job. When it's two people, it's both people's job to work on the relationship, maintain the relationship, keep the line of communication open, stay honest, be as transparent as possible. And one of the things that she mentioned in this email, be as vulnerable as possible with somebody that you're supposed to be able to trust. Be vulnerable with somebody because you trust them. I want to talk about vulnerability in a second, but coming back to what she said, I'm making strides to repair and heal it, then it's not the correct way to do it. When you have one person working on the relationship, the ship is listing, the balance is off, and that usually means that the other person isn't taking responsibility for their role, whatever they are doing, whatever they are saying, whatever they are contributing or not contributing to the relationship. It is a work in progress for two people or anyone in the relationship. It's a work in progress. It could be a family. It could be a multi-part relationship, polyamory. It could be anything. But it takes the totality of the people in the relationship to work on it. Now, if it's a family and there are children, that's going to be different. You can't expect the children to say, okay, this is my part and this is what I'll do. But you can instill in them how they should show up in the relationship. Hey, you know, instead of lying to me about that, just tell me the truth and we can talk about it. You know, because some kids lie. Maybe most kids lie. And it's helpful to instill good values, good communication, honesty, and transparency. And you also want to make a safe place for everyone to feel like they can express themselves and be honest. That safe place isn't something that when they are honest, you yell at them or they yell at you or they get angry at you. I mean, anger is allowed. But if you always feel emotionally threatened or worse, physically threatened, if you feel threatened when you share something, then it's not a safe place. And of course, it's going to feel less and less like a balanced relationship where both people are working on it together. So that's important too. It has to be a safe place to express and be yourself. And that's my primary goal in a relationship. When I get into a relationship, I want to be as close to who I am, almost 100% if I can. I usually can't. It's hard for people to be 100% themselves in a relationship because you have to reach agreements. You have to come to terms. You have to find or at least express how you feel about things. And when you disagree about things, you come to a place in the middle where you can maybe have to make some compromises. But for the most part, it's going in the right direction. It still has forward momentum. And when both people are working on the relationship, that's how forward momentum happens. Otherwise, imagine a rowboat where one person is rowing with one oar. Unless they're on the back of the boat and they're trying to propel the boat that way. But a rowboat requires two oars. One in one hand, one in the other. If one person has one oar, it's going to go around in circles. Not going to go anywhere. If one person has both oars, it's going to take a lot of energy. And the other person, what are they doing? They're just sitting there watching the other person work. I mean, it's not a big deal. In a rowboat, that's fine. A rowboat is a great place to get exercise and be with somebody where one person does all the work. Not a problem. But in a relationship, that's a problem. Both people should have an oar. That way you can continue your forward momentum and at least try to go in a fairly straight line or wherever you're going. You want to end up at the destination you're going. And either one person is going to do all the work trying to get to the destination that you both want to go, or both people can do it together. And what typically happens, using this as an analogy for relationships, is that when one person does all the work, they get tired. They will become exhausted. And they will look over at the other person and ask themselves, why isn't this person doing any of the work? I'm doing all the work here. My arms are tired. My hands are calloused. I'm doing all the work. Why can't they do something? And then sometimes this is what happens. The other person says, you're the one who has the issue, so you do the work. You're the one with the issue. You do the work. And that should bug you. If somebody said that to you, if somebody said, you're the one that with the problems, I think everything's fine, you should do all the work, that's a problem. That's an unbalanced relationship, and it's going to go in circles because the person trying to do all the work is going to get tired and will only go so far, especially against the current. So that's important. You want to do it together. It has to be a together thing. So the person who wrote and said she's trying to make strides to repair and heal it, it's just not the way it should work. That's not your job. It's both of your jobs. So I beat that one to death. I'm going to go to the next thing. You said he has agreed to counseling, but he doesn't want to talk about anything outside our appointments. So that's basically saying, I'll bring it up in counseling, which he probably feels safe to do so. But when we get home, I don't want to talk about it. I don't know how far that's going to go, because if you don't talk about it outside of counseling, does that mean your only connection and your bonding happens during counseling? Does that mean that he's willing to be vulnerable and maybe transparent or more transparent inside the counseling space? I'm not putting him down for that. I think that's a great way to do it if he's being open and honest and things are happening and there's progress there. But if you can't share this stuff with the person that you're with, that's supposed to be the person that you can trust more than almost anyone else. You know, when you love someone, especially in a romantic relationship, when you're in a romantic relationship, that's supposed to be the person that you love and trust the most. You know, most of the time, this is what happens. A romantic relationship gives you the opportunity to trust someone more than anyone else. And if you don't have that kind of trust where you can't be vulnerable and transparent and share the deepest, even darkest parts of you, then where does that go? And what do you do with that energy? If somebody is holding back and only sharing with somebody else, and they don't feel safe enough, or they don't trust you enough, or they're just afraid because of fear, and a fear of whatever, fear of confrontation, fear of looking stupid or feeling inferior, feeling unworthy, a fear of abandonment, fear of rejection. There's a lot of real fears that could be the reason that you might not want to share with somebody. But I think it's important to remember that when you're with somebody, especially in a romantic sense, that trust has to be really at the forefront. There has to be trust almost above everything else. Without trust, it's hard for the rest of it to fall into the right place. You know, it's like all the square pegs and the square holes. It's hard for that to fall into the right place because without trust, it's hard to feel safe. And without feeling, or without the ability to feel safe, it's hard to open your heart and it's hard to be vulnerable. And so this is what I see when he says he'll talk about it in counseling, but won't talk about it outside the appointments. Again, I'm going to give him this because that's what counseling is for. That's what therapy does. It gives you that safe space to express yourself. But I do hope this evolves into conversations outside of therapy, because otherwise, the only place where you actually might be able to bond and connect at a deeper level might be in the therapist's office. But I have a feeling what's really happening is that all of the negative stuff is coming out in therapy. It's probably unlikely that you go to therapy and you feel really vulnerable and connected to the person and you're feeling stronger toward them. Because that's where we vent, right? A lot of the times we vent in therapy. We express what we're afraid to express to the other person because we know there'll be a negative reaction. And again, therapy is great for all kinds of expressions, and it could definitely go positive, and it could create more bonding moments. It's supposed to, you know, in the end, it's supposed to either bring you together or help you reconnect with yourself, help you get to the truth, how you feel about each other, and so on and so on. But my point is, if you don't ever evolve to talk about stuff outside of therapy, then what you end up with is a very compartmentalized place that may not help the relationship along. It could. So this is, I can go back and forth with this one, but I do think that eventually you should be able to talk about things outside of therapy, which brings us to, well, I'm not there yet. Let's not go to vulnerability yet, but that's going to get to vulnerability. The next thing this person wrote is, she said, I used your technique of saying, you may be right. And I asked questions like a best friend would. And we had a breakthrough. And I think this is a great place to stop. And we're going to get into my technique, I guess you could call it. You may be right. And this is how you squash resistance or present something other than resistance. And I'm going to talk about that, get into details in a moment. We'll be right back after this. I don't know about you, but I've stayed at some hotels where as soon as I slipped into the bed, I wanted to take it home with me. If you're ready to experience the comfort of a luxury hotel every night, I want you to check out Etude's Clean Bamboo Sheets. Slipping into these sheets is like diving into a cloud of pure bliss. They're just luxuriously soft. They're also smooth as silk, more breathable than cotton. And I can attest to the breathability because my girlfriend and I have been sick and our temperatures have been fluctuating. Thankfully, we are using Etude, the world's first non-toxic bamboo fabric. It has been helping us to stay cool when we get hot. As a special treat for listeners of The Overwhelmed Brain, Etude is offering $25 off your first bedding order when you enter the promo code BRAIN at checkout. We're absolutely obsessed with our Etude sheets, and I think you will be too. These sheets have been performance tested to keep you at your optimal comfort level and body temperature. Don't forget, you can get $25 off your bedding order for a limited time when you visit etude.com/brain. It's like attitude, except with an E. Etude, etude.com/brain. Try them 30 nights risk-free. That's right. If they're not for you, return them. No questions asked. etude.com/brain. Happy sleeping. And I tell you what, being sick affects your mental health too. If you've been trying to be optimistic, whether you've been sick yourself or just trying to deal with some challenges that you can't just seem to figure out on your own, I highly recommend our other sponsor today, BetterHelp. Fortunately, we're both starting to feel better now. We're moving into the healing part of our journey, but I remember that long-term pain I used to deal with. I dealt with sciatic nerve pain for a good 15 years of my life. And there were times I was just plain depressed and I felt like giving up. Being in pain all the time was wearing me down and wearing me out. I'm so grateful BetterHelp exists today. BetterHelp is online therapy that is affordable and convenient. It works with your schedule and helps you connect with a professional that wants to help you feel better. Whether you're just feeling down in the dumps or you need to figure out why you don't feel yourself, if you're thinking of giving therapy a try, try BetterHelp first. It's convenient, flexible, affordable, and entirely online. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can even switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Live a more empowered life. Therapy can help get you there. Visit betterhelp.com/brain, and you'll get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/brain. Welcome back. Like I said, I'm going to talk about the you may be right process that I use. It's something I've talked about on the show before. And basically, it is when you have difficulty talking to someone because they're trying to convince you of something. You know, this is what you should do. This is what you should do. And you in your heart know, no, that's not what I want to do, and that's not what I should do. And then you get into a long conversation or even an argument, and it just goes round and round, and you'll never convince them that that's not what you want to do or that's not what you should do, and they'll never be able to convince you what they want you to do. It's just it becomes a pointless conversation. And so I thought, it's just easier sometimes just to say to someone, you know what, you may be right. That's it. You may be right. And when you say that, what it does is it squashes their forward energy. It neutralizes it. When they say, you know, you should do this and this is what you need to do and why don't you do this? It helps to just have a way out. It's like the Tai Chi reference I give every now and then. If somebody's throwing a punch, the person that is a master of Tai Chi is going to allow the punch to pass them. They'll step aside and all that energy, all that momentum will just go right past. So you can either be the wall of resistance and get hit with that energy, or you can step aside and let it pass. And that's how I look at some conversations. It's just sometimes a lot easier to allow their energy to pass right by you. And how do you do that? Well, this mental Tai Chi is just saying something like, or along the lines of, well, you may be right. Because what are they going to say? Okay, well, yeah, I know I'm right. They might say that. And then you can say, yeah, that's probably something I need to look into. You may be right. I'll definitely consider that. Now, they could be aggressive and say, well, consider it now. What do you think now? And then you just have to say, no, you may be right, and I need to really consider this. So thank you so much for that information. Thank you. I mean, it's really helpful. What you just told me is very helpful. It's not a lie. It's helpful in a number of ways. It could be helpful to let you know that they don't know what they're talking about. So it's helpful that they have revealed themselves. They have revealed their level of intelligence. Hey, it's very helpful. Thank you for that. You may be right. Well, is that a lie? No. I mean, are you right about everything 100% of the time? Maybe they're right about something. Maybe they spewed a lot of untruths at you, but there was one little truth in there. Hey, you may be right. You're not saying what they're right about. It's just that they may be right. Now, what that is that mental Tai Chi move where you step aside and allow the energy to pass. Because if there's nothing to hit, there's no resistance, then when they throw or spew all this energy towards you, it feels really negative often. When they throw that at you or they spew it at you and it doesn't land, then they're kind of stuck in that energy. They're still in it. And it doesn't mean that they're in a negative energy. It just means that it didn't land on you. And it's helpful for you to stay out of situations like that if it's a pointless conversation. I'm not saying you should avoid every conversation. I'm just saying sometimes it's pointless. Some people cannot be told that you don't want to do something their way. Some people do not want to hear that they may be wrong. Some people do not want to hear that they can't control you. Some people don't want to know that you disagree with them. They don't want to believe that they're wrong. They don't want to believe that there could be other truths out there, or they don't want to open their mind. And so we have to look at the world and figure out who these people are and stop getting into pointless conversations with them. So she said, I use your technique of saying you may be right. And what I'm going to assume that happened in this relationship is that all of his forward energy, all of maybe his aggressive or at least semi-assertive energy, whatever it was, it didn't land. And because it didn't land, it didn't meet resistance. And because it didn't meet resistance, there was no fuel for him to continue pushing anything down her throat. It doesn't give him any more momentum at all to continue going in that direction, because he finally feels like maybe she understands, or maybe she's opening her mind so that he doesn't feel like he has to push any type of narrative or agenda or whatever it is. All I'm saying is that when you offer no resistance, then what happens is that there is no argument typically that ensues. And when there's no argument, they usually step off of their soapbox or out of their defensiveness, out of their self-protectiveness, and open their mind a little bit, because now they have nothing to feed off of. They used to feed off of your resistance, or at least in this case, he used to feed off of her resistance. But without resistance, where does he go from there? He's used to the conversation going in that direction. But where does he go when there's no resistance? And this is where you find out a little bit more about people. You find out where they are inside themselves and what was their primary goal. Because some people's primary goal is to get you to disagree so they can have an argument. They want a debate. They don't want you to agree. They actually want to feel righteous. So this might have been happening here. And when you finally give in a little bit, or at least say something like, you may be right, you have a point, there might be some details that I hadn't considered, so I'm grateful that you brought that up. That is something I need to think about. So that takes away the resistance and allows a different conversation to take place. And this is what happened here. She said, I started asking questions like a best friend would, and we had a breakthrough. It can be very helpful to act like a friend and have a conversation as if you were their best friend, instead of acting like someone who had been hurt, like a jilted lover. It can be very helpful to show up and ask questions as if you were their best friend. So there's a big difference in saying, you were such a jerk when you did that. You were such a jerk and you made everything worse. That isn't necessarily something a best friend would say to you. A best friend, what would they say? They would probably say, well, what happened back then? How did you feel about that? How are you now? Well, what's going on with that? Are you guys getting along? I mean, even though it's about you, are you in a better space with that now? So it changes the conversation if you think like a best friend. That's hard to do, because if you're triggered, you're in the middle of an argument, you're in the middle of some big thing, what do you do from there? How do you get out of that space? It is a big step to say, okay, I'm just going to be a best friend. You don't tell them that, you just think this. And I'm going to ask questions as if I were a best friend. So what questions would they be? What questions, or what would I say if this were my best friend going through this? It's hard to step out of the role you're in that relationship, because you're in it. You're dealing with your own stuff. You're dealing with your own triggers. This is why I say it's not helpful or a good idea to be the coach in your own relationship, or be the therapist in your own relationship, even if you're a therapist, because you're in it. You're being triggered. I've been able to do it sometimes. I've been able to step into a coaching role even when it was about me. It takes practice. It takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of dissociation, stepping outside of my own beliefs, my own values, and just being there for someone unconditionally. Even if they say, I hate you and I want you to go away, I want to leave this relationship, all of that could come out. And it takes a lot of effort to not be affected by that and allow someone that safe space to express themselves. But it's damn effective if you can do it. If you can be there for someone without stepping into your own triggers or getting sucked into your own triggers, then that changes the dynamic of the conversation and it can go somewhere. I'm not saying it will, because they might not be able to see you as a helper. They might not be able to see you as a coach or a therapist. They just might be offended that you're trying to help them. They could be just upset at you and you'll never be able to help them. So it's usually better for an outside person to help. In this case, they're going to a therapist, thankfully, so that's helping a lot. Now, here we go. Let's talk about vulnerability. He said, I don't understand why we need to be vulnerable to create attachment or connection. She said, I believe him. He truly doesn't understand, and I think that's why he can't be vulnerable. What are some ways I can support him? Well, let's answer the question, or at least the comment, I don't understand why we need to be vulnerable to create attachment or connection. Let me present this. If I showed up at your door and I said, hey, I need your help, how would that feel? Hey, I need your help. You'd probably be suspicious. Who is this person? Well, maybe it's not me. Maybe you know me too well, or maybe you don't. But somebody shows up at your door and they say, I need your help. You don't know them, but they say, I need your help. So you feel there might be some vulnerability there and you want to listen, but me, I automatically jump into suspicion. Like, okay, what's this about? How much do you want? And this person says, I need your help. I just got a flat tire and I just need someone to come up with a jack so I can help change the tire. Oh, that feels okay. I can do that because that's not a big ask and they're not expecting me to hand money over. They're not asking to come into my house. It just sounds like somebody who's in genuine need of help. Okay, I might do that. But what if they said, hey, look, I don't want to talk about this. Just come and help me. I don't want to tell you what's wrong. I just want you to come and help me with this thing I'm working on. You'd be like, well, who are you and what do you need? I don't understand. It doesn't matter what I need. I just need you to come and help me. You're not so inclined to drop everything you're doing and help this person because they're not really being forthcoming with information. They're leaving a lot out. There's a lot of details that aren't there. And you're going to have some orange or red flags come up. And you're probably going to say, well, I need to know what it's about. Look, I can't tell you what it's about. I just need your help. Me, I'm thinking, unless you tell me, I'm not going to help you. I mean, that's my MO. That's what I'm going to do. That's where I go. If you don't tell me what's going on, I'm not going to help you. Okay, fine. I'll tell you. I have a problem. That's not really helpful. What problem? You can see I'm avoiding going any deeper into the details. And so this is sort of an example of what it feels like when somebody isn't vulnerable, when somebody doesn't allow you to see more of them than they're showing. Maybe it's a bad example, but this is the example that I just came up with on the fly. It's that they're not giving you enough information. You don't know enough of the situation. Therefore, it's more difficult to trust them. If somebody doesn't share enough of what's going on in their life, and especially if they're a stranger, it's going to be more difficult to trust them. And so this is how I see vulnerability, is that the less you share about what's going on inside yourself, the harder it is to trust. And you've heard me talk about trust earlier in this episode. Without trust, you don't feel too safe, if at all. Without trust, you don't feel safe. Without feeling safe, it's hard to love. It's harder to love somebody if you don't feel safe and if you don't trust. So when somebody is vulnerable with you, when they share their fears, their worries, their stresses, their challenges, their embarrassments, their shame, their guilt. When they share all this stuff, I mean, they don't have to share all of it, but when they share this stuff with you, you're more likely to feel safe with them. You're more likely to trust them. You're more likely to love them because you feel closer to them because they've allowed you to be closer. They've allowed you to come closer to them. They've taken off some emotional armor so that you can be closer. They've exposed some vulnerabilities inside themselves closer to their heart. That's how you feel. You feel closer to them, closer to their heart, because they've shown you parts of themselves that prove to you that they feel safe with you and that they trust you. And so this is how I feel about vulnerability. When you're vulnerable with someone, of course it creates connection. Of course it creates attachment. It has no choice because you are seeing where the person feels the most fear. You are seeing a part of them that they won't show to most other people. And they are trusting you enough to be this way in front of you, with you. They're trusting you to be vulnerable with you. That takes a lot of courage. And it shows you, if they're doing this with you, it shows you that they care enough about you to show more of them to you. So this doesn't mean that one has to be vulnerable to complete transparency. Like, these are all my sexual fantasies and I'm going to tell you everything. No, it's probably not a good idea. I'm just saying, this is how I see vulnerability that absolutely does lead to stronger connections, stronger bonding, more trust, more love, because there's a huge difference in someone coming along and saying, I've had issues in my past, I don't want to talk about it, but anyway, how are you? There's a big difference between that and saying, I had issues in my past. I was really afraid during my childhood because my stepfather was an alcoholic. And I would cower in my room and I would hear him kicking the walls downstairs and screaming at the top of his lungs. I would hear my mom crying and he would blast the country music. And I never knew when he was going to come upstairs and hurt me. I didn't know if that was ever going to happen. I remember my sister and I going through this. And I tell you this story. This is actually from my own past and I've dealt with a lot of it. But this is what I do. I share this vulnerability with you knowing that there are people out there that might think that, I don't know, they might think that I'm a wuss. They might say, oh, come on, that still bothers you? I mean, get over it. I don't think anybody would actually think that, but some people do. Some people do not want to be vulnerable because they don't want to get into a situation where somebody thinks badly of them. Somebody thinks that they are not as smart, not as strong, not as whatever. They don't want to be in any type of position where they feel weak. And that can happen with some people who have maybe low self-worth, low self-esteem, or fears they haven't dealt with yet. Fear of abandonment, fear of rejection, fear of confrontation. All these fears that we carry around with us, usually stemming from coping mechanisms in childhood. But, you know, they come from all different places. But this is what happens, is that we don't address our own fears and we're afraid to even let anyone else see those fears or know that we have them, because if we show them what we fear, they could use them against us. If I show you what I fear, you could use it against me. This is the thinking. And when one has that thinking, where if I show you fear, you'll use it against me, then they are less likely to be able to have very close relationships, because that's a vulnerability. Vulnerability is showing the deepest parts of yourself, knowing that somebody could crush you while you're that exposed, yet doing it anyway, surviving it, and then growing closer because you survived it and because you now understand that that person that you shared it with is trustworthy. So I shared something from my past that I've talked about before. It's not really affecting me anymore. I've healed a lot from it. But there was a point where I couldn't tell that story without crying. There was a point where I would have to take a break after I said something like that. And I said, just give me a minute. It was a lot to process and I need to figure this out. But this is something that happens when you're more vulnerable. You start to address your old traumas and your old fears. And when you address them, you bring it up, you talk about it, you express to people that you trust more than anyone else, then you can start to heal. And that's how I did my healing, a lot of my healing. So I just brought it up, just talked about it. Hey, this is what I'm embarrassed about. Hey, this is what I feel guilty about. Hey, this is what I feel shame around. This is what I've done. This is who I used to be. This is what I did to that person. This is when I messed my pants when I was a kid. Nobody wants to admit this stuff, but this is what happens. This is what happens when we admit this stuff. We actually grow closer to the people we're talking to. And yes, there are some people that you can't do this with. There are some people that you can't be vulnerable with because they're not safe and you can't trust them. You can't trust them not to hurt you. This is why you have to distinguish who these people are. And when you find someone that you can trust and you can express to, then nurture that relationship. These are the kinds of relationships that you want to keep. The people you trust, the people you can share with, the people you feel like you can be vulnerable with. Vulnerable with them, and they can be vulnerable with you. That is a bonding experience. So this person who wrote and said, I don't understand, her husband or whatever, said, I don't understand why we need to be vulnerable to create attachment or connection. It's true. He may not understand, but I just explained why. I don't know if this is going to help, but it is important, especially someone who feels like they can't trust unless you share more of yourself. You got to tell me what you need me for. I can't just say, okay, I'll help you with a problem without knowing what the problem is. First of all, am I qualified? Second of all, I don't know you. Third of all, where the heck are we going? I don't know anything about you. Okay, here's the thing. I stupidly drove on bald tires and I knew it was wrong and I shouldn't have done it, but you know, I have my kids in the car and I have my wife in the car and I didn't want her to know and I feel so stupid. I just don't want her to know that I did this. And so I'm just asking for your help. Will you please help me change this tire? Wow, of course. Of course I will. Now I feel like I can trust you at least a little bit more. I still don't know you. And I'm not going to do this in some dark alley, but yeah, it sounds like you really are being honest with me and you're being vulnerable, you're being transparent, and I finally feel like I'm hearing the truth of who you are and where you are. And yeah, maybe you should express this to your wife too, but that's not what you're here for. Let's go change that tire. So the last thing she wrote was, what are some of the ways I can support him? And when do I leave if he isn't ready? I won't keep living like this, but I see potential. Maybe the first thing you can do is allow him to listen to this episode if he wants. Don't force it on him, but say, look, this is why. This is why vulnerability creates a closer connection. This is why it strengthens the bond. This is why it'll allow me to feel closer to you. Because this is what vulnerability does. It allows you to be closer to someone. And if you are closer, you are more likely going to be more comfortable in their space. And if you're more comfortable, you feel safe, you feel more trusting, and that's when love has the best opportunity to grow stronger. How can you support him? Just like this, just like I'm talking now. This is who I am. Be yourself. Be yourself, and maybe he'll be himself. Because the greatest gift we can give someone is to be ourselves and hope that they like who we are. If I'm myself and you don't like me, that's perfect. Because I'm not going to be someone else for you. Just like you shouldn't be someone else, for them, for anyone. You should be yourself. And the people who like you and the people who love you will want to be in your life. And then there are those that won't accept you. There are those that won't accept you for who you are. And it's so important. I mean, this is one of my top philosophies, is that if you can't accept me for who I am, I'm not going to try to create a relationship with you. I'm not. I don't have time to be with somebody who can't accept me for who I am. And that used to be me. I mean, I used to be the person who couldn't accept the closest people in my life. I couldn't accept them for who they were. And so I tried to control and change them. And that was just the wrong way to do it. It's just unhealthy. It's emotionally abusive. And so that's who I was. And it took a lot of failures. It took a lot of relationship failures for me to finally realize that accepting somebody for who they are is the path to the greatest connection, the greatest love you could possibly have. My definition of love is supporting someone's path to happiness, even if you disagree with the path that they're on and the decisions they make. And that can lead to some very hard choices. That can lead to very hard choices, but this is the healing path that I had to take to become somebody that wasn't trying to control anyone else, wasn't trying to change them, is choosing to accept them for who they are instead of trying to change them into who I wanted them to be. And that changed everything. And what I've learned time and time again now, because I've kept doing this throughout the last 12 to 13 years, I keep accepting things that I used to have a problem with, and almost all the time it works out for the better. And what I mean by that is, let's just say that my girlfriend does something that I don't agree with, but I said, okay, I'm going to accept this. I'm going to accept for you for who you are. I'm going to accept your decisions. I may not say this to her, but I'm just going to think this in my head and actually say to her, okay, you know, whatever makes you happy, this is what I want for you. Whatever makes you happy makes me happy, because if you're happy, I'm happy. And so she goes ahead and does whatever it is. And then she feels closer to me. She suddenly feels closer because I'm supporting something that I wouldn't necessarily support in my own life, but because it makes her happy, I'm happy. And she senses that. She feels it. She realizes that I am supporting something that I may not agree with, but it makes her happy, and she knows that I'm happy if she's happy. So the whole thing makes her feel closer to me. And this is what has happened time and time again over the past decade with me, is that when I support someone doing something that they want to do, they almost always feel closer to me. And when they feel closer to me, they may or may not continue what they're doing, whether I agree with it or not, it's totally up to them. But they realize that they don't have to try to convince me of anything. They don't have to try to change my mind. They just know that I accept them, and that allows them to feel closer to me. So this is how you can support someone, is allow them to be themselves. Now, you still have to consider your own needs. You can support someone and their path to happiness and the decisions they make, but if you are feeling at a loss, if you feel some sort of emotional deficit, if you aren't getting your needs met by them, of course, express that to them. Have a conversation. Hey, look, you know, we don't kiss anymore. We don't hug anymore. We don't spend long nights holding hands. We don't do any of that stuff anymore. And I miss that. I want to be closer to you again. You know, whatever it is for you. You want to express this stuff, of course. But if they can't meet you there, then you also have to consider your own happiness. You have to consider your own needs. If your needs aren't getting met and you're only trying to help them support their needs, but they're not doing the same for you, then again, it's lopsided. The ship is listing. You're rowing in circles with one oar. Because supporting someone's path to happiness and the decisions they make means you want them to be happy. And it also means that a good, healthy, balanced relationship is they want you to be happy as well. So they're going to come back and do the same for you. Always two people working on the relationship. And now the last thing you asked is, when do I leave? Well, this is your own personal choice. You have to decide if your needs are being met or if they are starting to be met, and you have to look at the trend. Are my needs being met is the first question. Well, maybe, but no. Maybe that's your answer. Some of them are and some of them aren't. Well, my first question is, will you be okay if nothing ever changes from this point on? That's a great question to ask yourself. If you say, well, no, I want more, I want something to change, then you know your answer. Because if they don't change, then it's not going to be enough. And when I say look at the trend, have they progressed or have they been the same for weeks, months, or even years? In this person's case, has he progressed? Has he opened up? Has he become more emotionally connected? Have you felt stronger in your love? Have you felt more bonded? Have you felt him more connected to you? And if you haven't, then you have to come to the conclusion that he won't change. Well, you don't have to, but I think you should. I think it's important to make decisions based on the conclusion, based on the trend, and based on who they are showing up as today, that they will never, ever change. But what if they change tomorrow? Yes, it could happen. But if you assume that that person will never, ever change, then you can move forward. They could change tomorrow. They could change next week. And you could decide, okay, well, they're not going to change, so I'm not going to stick around. And then they finally get it. They finally say, oh, you're going to leave? Well, I told you I was going to leave. Yeah, but I didn't think you were serious. Well, I am serious. Oh, now I'll change. Now I'll work on myself. Now I'll be vulnerable. I see that happen a lot. This happens with people that are hurtful in the relationship, emotionally abusive people. They keep hurting the person they love. They keep hurting the person they love. And then that person finally says, you know what? I've had enough. I've cried. I've told you to stop and you won't stop. I'm leaving. And then that person says, what? Wait a minute. You can't leave. Why are you leaving? This is awful. I don't want this to happen. Well, you won't stop. So I got to leave. Okay, I'll finally stop. Hopefully they don't say it like that. Hopefully they say, oh my God, I don't want to hurt you. I'm so sorry. I got to work on this. I got to work on myself. I got to get into Paul's program. I got to do something because I don't want to lose you. And I don't want to be this way anymore. Hopefully they say something like that. And then they do change. But that's sometimes what has to happen. They have to be faced with the end of something or the big loss of something in order to finally get it through their skull. That's what it took for me. I had to finally experience the biggest loss that put that last nail in the coffin and convinced me that I was the problem and no one else was. I needed to take responsibility for what I was doing, for how I was showing up, and I also needed to realize that I was the common denominator for all my problems or all the relationship issues I've had. So when do you leave? You leave when you put all these pieces together. Has the trend been the same? Has he been improving? How do you feel today? And assuming that today is going to be the same as tomorrow and for the rest of the time you're together. And then you make the decision based on that. And if it turns out that you're wrong and you decide I'm going to leave and you discover that he really is changing and wants to change, then he needs to go through some serious changes in order for you to be convinced that he really has changed. Because just because you say you're leaving doesn't mean it's forever. It might mean that, but making a decision to leave doesn't mean it's over forever, I'm out of here, and you'll never see me again. It can, but it doesn't have to mean that. So leaving doesn't mean you are disappearing from the earth. It might mean that you might want to do that, but I don't want it to stop you from making decisions that actually might change something for the better. And what I mean by that is, if you decide to leave, it could change things for the better. He could actually start working on himself and take it seriously. Or you could decide to leave and he doesn't work on himself and he thinks it's your fault and he doesn't want to work on himself. So sayonara, and that might be for the best. That might be for the best, and that might be what needs to happen. The last thing you wrote is, I won't keep living like this, but I see potential. If it's potential, that means you must see something in the trend. You must see some changes, and you have to continue seeing the positive changes and seeing progress day after day after day. But you do have to watch out for old behaviors coming back and not leaving. Old behaviors have to disappear. Old negative behaviors have to disappear. If those don't disappear, but you see good new behaviors, but the old behaviors are still there, then it's not much progress. I mean, there's some, but you know, they cancel each other out a lot of the times. I'm not saying every time, but this is what happens. You just have to be careful about old behaviors still lingering. We don't want those behaviors to linger. So I dedicated this entire episode to this person, and I hope it has been helpful to you or anyone listening that is in a similar situation or has somebody in their life that might be in that same situation, afraid to be vulnerable, afraid to connect at a deeper level. I myself have personally experienced deeper love, deeper connection when I have chosen to be vulnerable, to be transparent, to express things that I'm afraid for anyone else to know about, because when I did, it allowed them to feel closer to me, which allowed me to feel closer to them, which continued in that circle of trust and circle of safety. It continues to grow. Hopefully it grows for you. Thank you for tuning in today. I appreciate you. We'll be right back with my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I appreciate you continuing to listen to me through my 85% voice coming back slowly but surely. Thank you, patrons of this week. The patrons are Allison, Harriet, Andreas, Anna, Debbie, Samaya, Mary, Paige, Brian, Donald, Stephen, Daisy, Winnie. I am so grateful for all of you. I had to take a breath. I did lose a little breath there. I am so grateful. Thank you for your support. These are the financial backers of the show. They give once a month because they can. And I am grateful for all of you. Thank you, patrons. Thank you for your generous support. If you find value in this show like these patrons do, head over to moretob.com where you have an option to give back. Thanks again, patrons. If you want a show on how to deal with difficult relationships, visit loveandabuse.com. I talked about emotional abuse and things like that, control, manipulation. You can head over to loveandabuse.com. That's my other podcast on difficult relationships. And if you know you're the difficult one in the relationship, like I used to be, head over to healedbeing.com. I have a very comprehensive step-by-step program that will walk you through changing who you are. I mean, it's a life-changing program, and it has been very successful for a lot of people over at healedbeing.com. And thanks to Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And let's see, my final words here. Somebody wrote to me. I actually worked with her when I was doing one-on-one coaching a long time ago, like 2017. She wrote and said, "Hey, Paul, I hope you remember me. I started listening to you in 2016 or so, and I decided today is going to be a gratitude day. I am on break from grad school after 3 years, and I'm finally going to start my internship as a marriage and family therapist in a couple of weeks. When I think back about myself and I first stumbled onto your podcast, I'm reminded of the long journey I'd been on. I didn't know what a boundary was until listening to you. I had so much to learn, and I had a lot of confusion about myself, my marriage, and being a parent of kids in distress. I'm so grateful that you were able to be my guide when I was feeling so stuck and so filled with shame from my past traumas. I remember being so grateful you took appointments, and I remember feeling so safe with you and crying on the phone with you and asking you if I will ever stop crying. And you assured me that I would. And you told me to keep going and don't fight it, and assured me that I would stop when I am done. Your wisdom, knowledge, warmth, kindness, and skill as a coach slash therapist slash guide was the beginning of me reclaiming myself and my life. I will be forever grateful to you for helping me when I so desperately needed it. I wish all the best always, with much gratitude. And I don't know if she gave me permission, but it starts with an S. I don't know if I'm supposed to say her name or not, but she said, I remember you read these on your podcast. Feel free to read this if you want. Let me know so I can listen to. I have let you know. I replied to that email. She sent it a few months back and I finally got to it. But yes, I am talking to you. S, I am talking to you. She probably wants me to say it. Say my name, damn it. Okay. I think I can. No, I won't say it. Well, let me see. Are there any details in here that will give you away? Probably not, Shirley. Good to connect with you again. Thank you so much for your message. I am so grateful for you and for sharing this. And I didn't share this to pat myself on the back or do it through you or anything like that. I shared it because it was a lot of vulnerability. I remember these calls that we had. I remember you allowing yourself to share some of the deepest, hardest things. It's very hard to share some of this deep stuff, your past, your shame, your past traumas. All of that is so hard to share. But when you do, look what happened. I mean, this is where you are, and you've gotten to such a different place than you were. Yes, I remember our conversations, and I am so grateful that you shared this. And I wanted to read this because this is what happens. This is what's supposed to happen. It's supposed to be like this. You're supposed to get into a better space when you allow yourself to be vulnerable. And speaking of the message I received when I talked about the whole first hour of the show here, that is a person, you know, she's talking about her husband or her partner, that is a person that if they aren't vulnerable, might keep things bottled up. What happens to emotions that are bottled up? They come out in destructive ways later, in unexpected ways. They come out through being triggered by certain things. And sometimes when you're triggered, it's not necessarily about what's triggering you, but it's about the deeper issue. It's about the bottled up emotions. And when those don't come out, when you choose not to be vulnerable, when you choose not to share the deepest parts of yourself, then you have to ask yourself, well, what happens to the negativity inside of me? Where does it go? Because if it's not leaving, it's not going anywhere, and it's going to come out in other ways. And we just have to be careful about that. So if you find someone that you can feel safe enough to be vulnerable with, and you may never feel safe enough to be vulnerable. This is why it takes courage sometimes. But this is why it's important, again, to be vulnerable, to connect with that deeper part of yourself and allow it to come out, to express it. If not with a friend, if not with a romantic partner, if not with a trusted family member, with a professional, with a therapist, with a coach, someone. How about a pillow? Express it to a pillow. Express it by yourself in your own room or in your car. Express it, bring it out. And it might be hard. It might be very hard to express some of this stuff inside of you. You know, I held on to hatred for a long time. A long time I held on to hatred. And I held on to it because I didn't allow myself to hate. So I had hatred, But I didn't allow myself to hate. So I just denied. I pushed it back down. I bottled it up. And bottling that hatred up caused me to act out in other ways that I didn't even realize were connected. And it took a person that I was dating that eventually became my wife, that person in the first few weeks of our relationship, she knew that I was feeling depression and I couldn't get past some of the issues in my life. And she said, well, you know, I'm going to leave. I'm going to go do my own thing. And if you can heal from this, if you can get past it, give me a call. But right now, this isn't the kind of relationship I want. And that scared the hell out of me. Because here I am thinking that I'm going to lose a great relationship. And so I don't know what shifted inside of me. But in that moment, I realized that I had hatred inside of me, not toward her, toward my stepfather. I held onto it for so long, and I didn't even know it was there. And so I decided to, I don't know if I decided, but it came out. I just started crying. I fell to my knees and I started crying. And then I yelled, I hate my stepfather. I hate him so much. And it was the very first time I allowed myself to feel hate. I denied myself from feeling it for so long because I thought it was wrong. Everyone told me it's not good to hate. It's not good to hold hate in your heart. So what I ended up doing was denying that I hated and just held on to it for a long time. And it came out in destructive ways, came out in bad behaviors toward people I loved. And then when I finally was able to express it and admit it, that I actually hated someone, I stopped hating. I'm serious. It stopped almost immediately because I finally admitted it. I finally allowed myself to be vulnerable enough to admit it. And once I admitted it, the hate was gone. That's all I had to do. In that moment, I thought, that was way too easy and hard at the same time, because I never wanted to go there, and I let myself go there. And when I went there, the hate disappeared, because I finally let it out of its prison. It's gone. It just went away. I hate him so much. I hate him. I feel relief. It's gone. The hate is gone. What? Where'd it go? It doesn't matter. It's gone. I'm not saying it's always easy to release like that. But boy, if you're denying something or blocking something or repressing or bottling, whatever is inside you, if it's a negative feeling, if it's a negative emotion, it helps to be vulnerable to allow yourself to connect with it and release it. And that is hard to do. It's like saying, okay, I'm going to go pick up that hot potato and I'm going to hold on to it and I'm going to throw it. But I don't want to pick it up in the first place. So that means I'm going to be stuck with this hot potato. Hot potato? Maybe I can use something like, how about a burning coal? I'm going to go pick up that burning coal. No, I don't want to pick it up because it's going to burn my hand. I don't want to burn my hand, so I'll just leave it there. And it'll just be in my stomach. Just leave that burning coal in my stomach. No, get it out. Burn your hand. You might have to. But once it's gone, it stops burning. And, you know, it's not always this fast and efficient. Sometimes you do have to go through some trials and tribulations of expressing yourself, trying to find the courage to do it. But when you express yourself and when you're able to release some of the stuff that might be inside of you, when you choose to be vulnerable, when you allow yourself to express what you have been so afraid to express, you free yourself, or at least you start the path of freeing yourself. And that opens you up. That opens you up for love and connection like nothing else can. It allows people to get closer to you. And that can be a wonderful thing. Thanks for showing up today. I'm glad you listened to the show all the way to the end. I just want to remind you to keep an open mind. That allows you to step into your power and help you be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.